There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Welcome back to the Fantasy Pros NFL Draft Show. My name is Derek Brown, and with me, as always, the Minnesota Madman, Thor Nystrom. On today's show, we are going to talk about the deep sleepers of this NFL draft class. Thor and I have run through all the top guys at every position. We've given you all of these guys. This is the episode you need to be tuning into. We are going to get really into the thick of it. Thor, are you ready for this, man?
I am, yeah. I mean, we've hit draft week. We have talked, we've gone position by position. We have talked about all the top guys in this class. So now the people want to know, who are our favorite pet sleepers in this class? You guys are about to find out.
It's going to be a blast, man. Before we jump into these top 10 players that we're going to discuss today, got to tell you again, we talked about this on last week's episode. You have got to be getting into the NFL Draft Prop Picks Challenge over on Betting Pros. It's easy to enter. Download the Betting Pros app today. Go to bettingpros.com/draft. Click the button, join the group. If you log your draft props either via Quick Picks or sync your bets in the app, that's all you got to do, man. Minimum 5 bets to enter. The prizes are going to be awesome. First place gets a year of Betting Pros and Fantasy Pros premium sub. Second through fifth place, a $25 Betting Pros gift card. Get yourself some swag, man. So get entered. Again, download the Betting Pros app. Visit bettingpros.com/draft, join the group, and make your picks. Thor, let's dive into this, man. These guys that we're going to talk about in first position up here, we're going to talk about some running backs here, man. And our parameters for these guys, you couldn't pick anybody inside the top 15 running backs per consensus. Who is the first guy you want to mention here?
Well, so let's start out with the quarterback position, which it's, you know, we talked about the top 10 guys, and with the parameters, we're not wanting to discuss guys that we did before. You have to go outside of that, which already makes it pretty deep with that quarterback class. We're getting into UDFA land. So my favorite guy of the UDFA quarterbacks, and again, we're getting pretty deep here. But
outside the top 13 and per consensus, man.
Outside of the top 13. So this is a guy who I believe will be a UDFA. But the guy that I think is kind of interesting there is John Rhys Plumlee from UCF. Ooh. And the reason why is you have the athletic traits there with a guy who has the arm talent. And we know this because it plays on two different athletic fields, and it has on the same day in the past. UCF once put out a video where he was playing baseball. He was on the baseball team, both at Ole Miss and UCF. And then he later in the day was played in the, I think, the spring football game at UCF. But he's a dual sport kind of a guy. You see this with him at quarterback, both the good and the bad aspect of it. But, you know, in terms of the good aspect, he is one of those guys that absolutely can throw on the run and can do the thing of that you love to see from those guys of throwing it from the multiple different arm slots. Mm-hmm. He's very natural with that. He has more oomph in that arm than you would think. As those, and I know that you fit into this category, D-Bro, as those who have watched Javon Baker's film are well aware. So that's what you like. And as far as the athleticism, I'll hit that before I get into the negatives with him. Nearly 6 feet, 203 pounds, and an 88th percentile athlete. And further on the athletic stuff, this kid is such a good athlete that early on in his career, back when he was at Ole Miss, in a Rich Rodriguez offense at Ole Miss, Rich Rodriguez actually benched Matt Corral for John Rhys Plumlee. Of course, the Rich Rodriguez system, the old West Virginia system, people remember Pat White and the whole thing that they were doing back then, back in the day at West Virginia. That's what Rich Rod was preferring that John Rice Plumlee did as opposed to Matt Corral. And that's Matt Corral's career almost went wayward there for a second because of that. But then things, you know, started to go sort of the opposite way. But for a year after that, John Rice Plumlee played, he shifted and played some slot receiver at Ole Miss. Then, of course, when the new coaching staff came in, Matt Corral took back over at quarterback. John Rice Plumlee played slot receiver for a campaign before then transferring to UCF, kept playing baseball throughout, went back to quarterback. So John Rice Plumlee, bit of a renaissance man. And again, the thing that I like, you definitely see this snappy arm with him. He has a playmaking bent. He makes more, I'll just say it, NFL caliber throws than you would think from the profile, from the frame, then, you know, just heading into his tape. The things going the other way, and the reason that he is going to be undrafted, and the reason that some people listening to this don't know who this guy is there the bouts of inaccuracy with John Rice Plumlee. And then the other thing, the frustrating thing watching his tape, and the thing where the translation to the NFL of, can they teach him this? John Rice Plumlee, and D-Bro, you know this as well from watching Javon Baker's tape and the other UCF guys, he locks on to reads a lot. And that's, you have, when you have these kids that go from, you know, the one level to the next, and you like physical traits of theirs, you like the athleticism, you like the arm, but you see them so often locking on to the pre-delineated read, and then you see a guy streaking open, and he just didn't see it because he was locked on to the one thing. It's hard for that kid at the next level to be taught that. Can John Rice Plumlee be taught that? And then the mechanic stuff, I think that is more fixable. Because, again, this is a guy who, going back years, he played in the multiple different systems. And in college, might have been three or four, going back to Ole Miss with the multiple coaches, then with Gus Malzahn at UCF, and then was playing the multiple sports. I think you can work on the footwork and the upper body mechanics, marrying that to the lower body more to improve the accuracy. But the thing of, John, we have to teach you how sitting in the pocket, surveying your options, the systems he has played in and the way that they sort of worked around that with him, I don't know if that will be fixable for him. However, you have the, and this is why I'm a little bit more bullish on him. You have the multiple bullets because of those athletic traits and because he has played slot receiver in the past. I don't know if people in the draft community are giving him enough credit for that. I think you have the first bullet with him as the quarterback. And what he is showing there, he was pretty good at UCF the past couple of years. He showed some stuff in the past at Ole Miss. If it doesn't work out there, you have pint-sized Taysom Hill, but, you know, now we can kick him to the slot receiver, and you have some gadget utility type stuff with him as well, potentially kick him down the line. If not, he's going to be a pretty good UFL player, or else he can go back to baseball. But an interesting player, I thought, D-Bro.
Yeah, I mean, look, at this point, what we're looking at for a lot of these different guys, do they have the athletic traits? Is the package there, if they could put it all together, that what can they be in the NFL? Because a lot of these players, like you're talking about with Plumlee, when you're playing multiple sports, I mean, come on, Thor, like we all know this. Like, you're playing multiple sports even growing up, like narrowing it, your focus down to just one sport is also going to help you as well. So looking at the skill set, that's what we're going for here. Like, guys that have the traits, maybe they might not be as refined. Some of these guys we're going to get into have bounced around smaller schools and stuff. And look, that's going to bring me to my first guy. And going with the first running back here, again, using guys only RB15 or lower, and he's gotten a little bit of talk out on social media, but in the NFL draft circles, he's not getting talked about enough, man. And that, I want to bring up Blake Watson here, running back out of Memphis. And I turn on Blake Watson's film, and you see the analytics immediately when you watch him. Like, his numbers just on paper, Thor, are impressive, man. Over the last 2 years, he's been 34th and 4th in yards after contact per attempt. In 2022, he was 4th amongst all running backs with at least 100 carries in PFF elusive rating. So we're talking about a good rusher of the football, as well as a player who was 20th in yards per route run last year. So there's receiving utility here. And the thing I want to bring up about Blake Watson, man, is he a little bit undersized? Sure. But can he play, man? And watching his film, that he has better leg drive than people would give him credit for at his size. You look at his contact balance, and he's a tough interior runner, man. Like, he pinballs off dudes in the second level. I said this out on social media, and I'll say it again here on the show. I think Blake Watson is who everybody wants Bucky Irving to be. An undersized running back that runs tougher than his size. And hey, guess what? Blake Watson actually tested well. He ran a 4.4 at his pro day. So with a short area agility, I don't think is amazing, but I think he's a good runway back. I think he can break tackles. I think there is pass game utility because they did line him up a little bit in the slot and out wide. And while it wasn't a ton of reps, you saw him also run a few outs, a few curls. I think that ability, again, we're looking at skill sets that could translate. Maybe we see a little more pass game utility in the NFL, but I like Blake Watson's game. Again, also talking about a guy that you talked about, Plumlee bouncing back and forth between baseball and football. Blake Watson was still learning the running back position. Like when he got to Old Dominion in 2019, he was a wide receiver and they transitioned him to running back. So he didn't even go to the college playing the position. So we're talking about a player that, okay, yes, has he been playing running back for a few years now? Okay, that's fine, but that's still not the same as I've been playing running back since high school or since peewee football. So there's still some growth that can happen, man, but tell me, what are your thoughts on Watson? Because we have not talked about any of these guys on the show yet.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy where he shows up at Old Dominion and he was this pint-sized receiver guy out of high school that had been sort of overlooked. And initially he redshirts and was a kick returner guy, special teamer initially. 2018, he was the special teamer, redshirt, you know, whatever. 2019, he Conference USA, honorable mention as a special teamer. And then it begins a star-crossed kind of a thing for Blake Watson, where in 2020, Old Dominion was one of the very few FBS programs that had their season outright canceled by COVID. Nothing you could do about that. Comes back in 2021. That's where he had bulked up enough, and in conjunction with a position change that helped facilitate it by bulking up to running back, that's where he really broke out and burst onto the scene for yours truly, D-Bro. As you know, I run that 50-team college fantasy football league that is only for the sickest of the sickos. And Blake Watson was a guy that I picked up in September of that year because started to see that he was getting usage for this Old Dominion team after having switched positions. Mm-hmm. And down the stretch, they started to use him more and more and more. And you knew that he had the receiving utility. Well, it turned out that he was a really good running back. Then, of course, he transfers to the bigger school last year and at the bigger location showed out even more. And then you mentioned the pre-draft process really opened eyes there with the athleticism as well. This kid's a really good receiver. He has shown it as a running back the past couple years. He has return utility as well. He's a bit of a late bloomer, and I think that is why whether you want to say overlooked or whether you want to say outright disrespected, to me, it was disrespectful that the NFL did not give him a combine invite. Like there's, agreed. You know, it's like, you know, combine snub, but then there's other guys where it's like, all right, there's really no justification for this. Blake Watson was one of the, there's really no justifications for this. You look at what he did the past couple years at two different schools, and the two-way utility, both as, you know, again, the runner and as the receiver, and then also a three-way utility, really, if you want to toss in the returning. And when you watch him, it's like, you know, you knew he was around the, you know, the 200 pounds, whatever, but it's like, you know, so it's like slightly beneath the threshold, but it's not like he's the world's tiniest person. I didn't really understand, and he, the athleticism, he appeared to be athletic on tape, which then he proved during the pre-draft process. Somebody made a mistake with that. This kid absolutely deserves to get drafted, and I'm with you, D-Bro. He absolutely is a sleeper. Would not surprise at all if he began making an impact as a committee back this coming season. If he grabbed a hold of a role in that and became a bigger and bigger part of it as it went along.
Well, and people looking at my rankings over on Fantasy Pros, after watching him and writing him up, dude, he's my RBA to this class.
Wow.
And people might be surprised by that, but again, putting respect on his name, 5'9", 200 pounds, has an 8.9 RAS score, Thor. He ran a 4.440. He jumped 41 inches in the vert, which is a 99th percentile outcome, had an 11.3 broad. Now, you can ding him a little bit for his short shuttle and his three cone again, but that shows up on his tape. If you give this guy space, he can hit dingers, man. I love his game. So, again, putting respect and people looking at, I think a lot of us are looking at this running back class and we're looking at, okay, who can be one of the heroes of this class? If a guy steps forward, could it be, you know, people have talked about Isaac Arendo. People have talked about Tyrone Tracy. There are guys in this class with some really interesting skill sets. And I think Blake Watson is another one that people need to be discussing. So, yes, like looking at all these parts and pieces to his game, I like him a lot, man. I mean, that definitely shows up in where I'm ranking him now. But keeping this rolling, dude, who is the next player that you're going to bring up here?
Kamani Vidal. And I have brought him up on some of the shows this spring, but he was outside the consensus threshold to make mm-hmm. our last running back episode, which means that he qualifies for this one. And, you know, we like his game. And in particular, I love Kamani Vidal's game, but the industry continues to sleep on Mr. Vidal. So you know, we have to serve the function of giving him his flowers.
Well, speaking of the respect, where do you have him in your ranks right now for running backs? Because I think we're still hand-holding, right?
Yeah, we are. In so on my 500 board, Kamani Vidal is RB7 for me, and I love have it. Him as a top half of the fourth round type guy. Now, love do it. I think he's going to go in the fourth round? Not necessarily. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. he's going to get picked at some point on Saturday, probably a bit later than that. But we are not alone on Kamani Vidal. He has some ardent supporters out there, including Jim Nagy, the czar of the Senior Bowl. Jim Nagy says that Kamani Vidal is one of his favorite sleeper running backs in this class as well. Goes absolutely nuts about him. The Kamani Vidal hive is strong. I would imagine that Kamani Vidal has some enormous fans inside of NFL buildings as well. So we'll see how strong those voices are as well. But yeah, I don't want to say that he is an acquired taste, but he is a guy where if you just look at him, you know, like he's a small sort of a dude coming from the Sun Belt. Right. And see, like, you just like the height, he's beneath 5'8". He is 213 pounds. So the classic bowling ball build. And when he came into the process, people did not think he was athletic. He didn't catch a ton of balls at Troy, but he shocked a lot of people with his testing, tested as an 80th percentile athlete. And particularly with the speed in Indianapolis, proved the concept of that.
I'll own it. He surprised me. We talked about this pre, and I said, look, I think he's got maybe 4.5, 4.6 speed. So when he came out, he ran a 4.46. I'll own that. I did not see that coming, dude.
I wasn't going to call you out for it, but if you
I'm calling myself out for it. I mean, I'm keeping it real, man. Like, you have talked about Kamani a ton this entire process. I'm just glad people get to hear this take.
Yeah, but Vidal, the other thing, so, you know, a guy who's on the smaller side, but the last couple of years proves the concept that he can handle bell cow, and I'm talking true bell cow usage. So in 2022, over 14 games, 231 carries, 26 receptions, 257 touches, which he turned into 1,272 yards and 10 touchdowns. Last year, on another very good Troy team in the Sun Belt, 297 carries, 1,661 yards on the ground, 14 touchdowns. Then he had 18 more receptions, 201 yards through the air, and another touchdown. That's 315 touches from scrimmage for 1,862 yards, 15 total touchdowns. So you had all that stuff. Again, one of the nitpicks with him on the field was, oh, he didn't get a ton of catches. Well, the constitution of the Troy's offense, it was, Kamani, you are the early down bell cow. So they give him the ball, give him the ball, give him the ball, which the defense knew, which is why Kamani Vidal faced about as many. He was basically the Blake Corum of the G5, where the defense started to move guys up. on the early downs, because and Troy, they would, their offense, you know, like they had the different formations where the on the early downs where the defense knew it was coming. They tried to have the different blocking angles, so they'd move guys up. So it was a little chess match like that. But then on the passing downs on the third and six, when the defense knew the passing down was coming, usually Troy would keep Kamani back. They keep him on the field, but they did not send him out usually as the receiver, unless it was like they keep him back to chip, and then they would have him after that. If they didn't need him, then he would go back out and just be the dump off guy. But the point I wanted to make about this, I talked to Kamani Vidal down in Mobile, and he talked to me about how in Mobile, the number one thing he wanted to prove to NFL evaluators is I am a good receiver. They just didn't use me as much like that. But what I did show at Troy is I'm a very good pass blocker. This is something that Jim Nagy was going nuts about on Twitter, about how Kamani Vidal is the best pass blocker in this class. Like, that was the thing that Troy said, like, Kamani, like, that's what we need you to do is pass block. Kamani Vidal is a stunningly good pass blocker. You wouldn't think it because of his frame. And I don't think that linebackers realize it when they just come screaming down through like open holes. And then it's just like Kamani Vidal. And it's like, oh, we're going to run over this twerp. And then we're going to annihilate his hapless quarterback. And then Kamani Vidal gets down with a wide base and then just goes right down into your lower half. He'll chop you down right beneath your hips. You see him flip guys over. You see him stone guys where it's, and you see like their eyes bulge out of their head. Cause it's like a Humvee that, or a Suburban that goes full speed into like on the highway, like a median, right? And all of a sudden, it's just a, like this high-speed collision. It just stops on a dime, and there's problems. You don't get past Kamani Vidal. He's just so good with the technique of it. He knows where to attack on it. And again, he gets undersold even by the competition, but the technique of it, the way he gets after it, he denotes where the guy's coming from. He knows where the danger is. He steps up. But the thing I want to talk about more, I think he's super duper undersold as a runner to the point of what we're doing here. Fantasy players, this is particularly topical for you. The bowling ball thing, again, with the athleticism that's way better than people thought heading into the process. Kamani Vidal, because he was given all this usage, he was the engine of that entire Troy offense. And these Troy teams were good. Both of them were at the top of the Sun Belt. The team last year went 11-3. The year before, the Trojans were 12-2. So these were very good Troy teams. The entire offense was Kamani Vidal. So teams would begin to stack the box. One example of this, people want to see this, is the when they stepped up in competition against Kansas State, they started doing the eight-man boxes against Kamani Vidal. There's one rep where he blows through the eight-man box. All of a sudden, he's running behind the defense. So you get to see both his ability, the acceleration through the hole, even with all the traffic getting through there, and then his wheels downtown. The acceleration, I really like his sort of hide the ball under the cup routine behind the offensive line because he's so small. He's not a he's sort of unorthodox for a type of back like he is. Like he physically, he sort of is similar dimensions to Blake Corum, but a very different kind of a back. Blake Corum is the he's like the patient guy. He's like waiting. And then it's like the side to side agility, right? Like, and it's like the make you miss and then trying to like run through the arm tackles, the different stuff like that. Like Kamani Vidal is north, south. He wants to go north, south, north, south. And he can, where his agility comes into play, he has the one cut, but he is trying to go north, south, and he'll try to change your vantage point right before the contact point to force what is a flush tackle attempt into an arm tackle attempt that he will then invariably run through. Kamani Vidal is very, very good at breaking tackles, in part because of this. And he has the great, great, great contact balance. Was the last thing I was going to say about him. The true spinning top from Inception. You know, you could think about him like that. Reminds me, the guy that I comp him to is Jaylen Warren. I got to ask him about that down at the Senior Bowl. Jaylen Warren, his last year at Oklahoma State, was number two in the FBS that season in forced missed tackles. Last season, Freudian slip. Last season, Kamani Vidal was number two in the FBS as well enforce missed tackles. I think you're going to get sort of similar usage and the way that he looks in the NFL. I think it's going to be a similar thing where he gets paired up with somebody else as the 1B to someone else's 1A. And he offers sort of a fascinating change of look kind of element to what they get from the other kind of a guy, and gives defenses problems, a different kind of a look than they're anticipating, but really like Kamani Vidal's game.
Oh man, we have talked about Kamani Vidal all the way going back to Senior Bowl, man, and I've really warmed up to his game through the process. I mean, I've gone back to his film twice, and to put a bow on this, he's my RB5 of this class. I do have him over Blake Corum, and I do have him over Braylon Allen. My comp for him, maybe I need to come around to the Jalen Warren comp, has been Devin Singletary. But to your point, he is a better athlete than Devin Singletary was coming out. And the other parts of his game, man, and you talked about the bowling ball, like he pinballs off of guys in the second level. I mean, he uses his size definitely to his advantage at 5'7", 213. You talked about the athletic testing. I mean, again, the 88th percentile short shuttle, the 88th percentile vert. Much better athlete than I gave him credit first pass through his film. But the numbers also stand up, Thor. You talked about the volume aspect of him. 57% of his games in his final collegiate season, he had at least 23 carries. So people need to let that simmer. He has proven that he can handle volume in that season as well. 21st. Amongst all FBS and FCS running backs with at least 100 carries, 21st in PFF elusive rating. So dude's got chops and he can play, man. I'd love to see him go around for the NFL draft. Probably not going to happen, probably because of this class and the strengths in other areas of this class. Probably around five guy. But if he ends up on a depth chart and with a coaching staff that says, look, we're going to take whoever can play and can prove themselves in camp, don't be surprised if he makes noise and he's the 1B in a committee and he's pushing for starter reps in his rookie season. I don't think it's out of the range of outcomes, man. And I know that sounds hyperbolic because people hate this running back class. Oh, do they hate this running back class? But there are some guys that can play and we're trying to put respect on names here, man. And again, talking about giving respect where it is freaking due is going to lead me to the first wide receiver we're going to bring up here. And the guys we're talking about in the wide receiver grouping on this show, outside of the top 21 wide receivers per consensus, Thor, I was add this guy to the list of players with Javon Baker and Jermaine Burton that when I went to their tape, I was not expecting to see what I saw. And it shows out in the numbers, man. And the guy that I know that I'm burying the lead here, but I've been impressed with him. That's Jalen Coker out of Holy Cross. You look at all the wide receivers first getting into the analytics, all wide receivers of the last 2 years out of all guys in FBS and FCS with at least 50 targets. Jalen Coker checks boxes, man. Ninth in yards per route run, 18th in yards per route run of the last 2 years, ninth and 40th in PFF receiving grade. I was not expecting to see a guy that the movement skills are definitely there. You see pacing, you see head fakes, jabs, things in his routes where I'm not expecting this out of a guy that comes out of Holy Cross. And I'm watching his film and I'm like, whoo, ha! Whoa, my dude, come on. You just made this corner look silly. Like, did you have to do him like that? Body control when he's in the air. I mean, some of these sideline catches and back shoulder catches he's making in the air, you're just like, okay. Yep. That's an NFL quality rep. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And it's not just the route running, and it's not just the ability to play above the rim. He can offer you some yak too. He can break tackles. And you're seeing on the reps from the quarterbacking play of Holy Cross, like there's times and there's two definitive plays I'm thinking about in my head right now where Jalen Coker runs a freaking dig route. He comes back to the quarterback and he's throwing his hands up in the air and he's like, throw me the ball. And then it doesn't come out. It's very Keaton Slovis-ish where it's like, I'm going to count to four and then I'm going to wait till the cornerback runs on top of you and then I'm going to throw the ball. And so now you're in a contested situation when you really shouldn't have been because you burnt the guy and left him in the shadow realm and you had three steps of separation. But by the time the ball got there, sadly it wasn't the case, man. But Tell me, do you need to talk me off the ledge about Jalen Coker? Because I know you went back to his tape the night before of us recording this show. What did you think about him?
Yeah, you were going so nuts about Jalen Coker that last night I had the occasion, like it sort of forced me to go back and watch the entire catalog of Jalen Coker's 2023 work, which then led me back into his entire catalog of his entire 2022 catalog.
You love to hear it. You love
which
to hear it.
And I quickly realized with the deeper dive that on the couple games that I had seen of him before, I had gotten the wrong impression of Coker. I had undersold him in my initial rankings. The when you get the longer look at him, the ball skills of Coker explode off the screen. Was the thing that was just so wildly impressive to me. Just the one after the other, after the other, after the other. There was one play down the sideline. I forget the opponent. I think this was, they did play some FBS teams.
Are you talking about Boston College? Because that was one of the first games I watched.
I don't know. I don't think that was against Boston. But they did play Boston College. They did play Army the year before they played one. So he does have experience against some FBS teams for people out there. But, you know, he does come up from the FCS in Holy Cross. But in this game, he lines up on the far side boundary, so on the top of the screen, and he goes, you know, I don't know, they must have been 25, 30, 35 yards away from the end zone. And it's not bad coverage by the cornerback, except the cornerback is terrified now because he knows that the ball is going to be coming his way, and he's terrified that Coker is going to do what he does to everybody, which is the ball's coming and then Coker is just going to jump over him and just steal it. And so the cornerback, it's like he's a child throwing a tantrum, and he grabs Coker's left arm like a child with his father, like, "No, Dad." Coker grabs the ball with his right arm and catches it in the end zone. They score the touchdown. The ref throws the flag, and Coker, like, and I didn't even blame him for this. He, like, because the cornerback ends up on the ground, and Coker, like, and it wasn't super egregious, especially because the cornerback spent like 10 yards, like literally just holding onto his arm, and it was in the end zone, you know, where he catches the thing with one arm. Coker had to do a little yap in there. He's not the there's bigger guys
sometimes
in this class.
Sometimes you gotta let him know, Thor.
Yeah,
come
like
on, you know,
like Javon Baker, and there's a couple other guys in this class that are way bigger talkers. But that was the bigger ball skill with him that I loved the subtlety. The late hands thing with him is really cool. To the point where it's almost even beyond a late hands thing. Sometimes down the sidelines, he almost doesn't even telegraph anything whatsoever. Where there was a couple times I had to go in slow motion because he almost doesn't put them up at all if he doesn't have to. Like, there was one play where it was down this is another one. Now, it is an FCS. It was another one, I think, where it's against an FCS one. But the what happened at the catch point, it's the same manifestation, you know, as, for instance, the play before where he had to do it with one hand because he's literally getting the other one taken away from him. This one, the throw, because of that, and because of the way that this thing happened, there's this guy, the guy who's on him in coverage, this thing's down the sideline, and the throw has him up the sideline. They might have been like ending up around like the 10-yard line, and because of the way that the defender was, Coker does not want to let the guy know that the ball is coming. And so he basically doesn't put his hands up at all. Like Coker's on the inside towards the boundary, and the defender's like on his right. So Coker just lets it go over his shoulder, basically doesn't put his hands up at all, and then just catches it like right when it, like, doesn't show the defender whatsoever. It was almost like an optical illusion that the ball ended up in Coker's hands. Like I said, I had to go back a couple times of like, when does he actually flip his hands up into like cups when the ball goes over the shoulder? there were, and then just the hands themselves, he extends very, very easily outside his frame to spear these things. Now that those are the things that I love. The ball skills are fabulous with that kid. His hands are awesome. He does all those cool ball skill things.
Only two drops last year. One occurred on a poorly located ball, and another one was versus Lafayette in the freaking rain. So just to throw that out there.
And watch, if people are only going to watch one of his cut, watch his contested catch one. It's very fun. He posterized people. It's very fun. The nitpicks with him, or not even nitpicks, just the fair things. Lack speed. You know, in the NFL, he is not going to concern anyone with his speed. The thing that and the separation, I don't know that he's going to be torching anyone, you know, as far like the D-Bro, you made a good point with the rail running. I think that will open up some of the windows, but like the ball skills, I think, to me, proves the concept of, you know, you open up just a little bit of those windows, then you have the ball skills, you have the late hands thing, you have that little trick. I think to me that proves enough of the concept. To me, that kid, he's going to hang wide receiver 4 or 5 initially, no doubt about it. And to me, there is upside here. Potentially, the ceiling to me is the possession wide receiver 2. I think that is the bonanza ceiling. It potentially could get there. I mean, certainly that is bonanza ceiling. But I don't see this thing being any worse than the you know, initially, like I said, the wide receiver 4 or 5, because he's not going to embarrass himself with those ball skills. And he has the at least the explosion. What I saw was that burst, which you see out of some of those route breaks, you know, like you're talking about, D-Bro. You mentioned sort of the head deeks and some of the nuance that he has. The athletic trait that I noticed, and D-Bro, the vertical is where he showed this, and the 10-yard split doesn't have the long speed, but you see this off the line and then out of the route breaks is how he will get some of the separation with his athleticism in addition to some of those route running machinations.
I mean, 6'1 3/8", 208. His hand size jumps off the page too. 82nd percentile. Now, you talked about the long speed, and I agree with you there. He's not a burner. He can win deep, but he wins deep based off of his ability at the catch point and his route running. And again, there's a lot of, and I'm not drawing the direct comparison, but watching his film, there are a lot of similarities in what the things that I really like about Javon Baker's game that I like about Jalen Coker's game. And looking at, you talked about the 10-yard split, 76th percentile, but yes, dude, he jumped out the freaking gym. Vertical was at 42.5, 98th percentile. His broad was 128, 86th percentile. So the leaping is definitely there, man. So he's got the athleticism. He's got the short area chops. I agree with you. I think he lands on some team as the wide receiver 4, maybe 5. But all he needs is to get into an NFL room, get even better coaching at the next level, and to unlock all the other parts or pieces of his game. I would not be shocked if he, in 2 years, we're looking at a guy that has ascended to be a wide receiver 2 on an NFL depth chart. And it might sound spicy, but the kid's got talent.
D-Bro, what round do you think he ends up going this weekend?
I think round 5, probably. If you were to tell me, and maybe I'm just out over my skis, but if you were to tell me he gets into round 4, I wouldn't be surprised. What do you think?
I think probably round 5. Wasn't there a round 5 receiver from last year that...
Don't you do this! I knew you were going to do it! Don't you do this!
That you were a fan of... forgetting the name of that kid.
We'll just call him Puka Juice. We'll go from that. We'll just go with the short handle, okay? Yes. I knew you were going to go there. I knew it. I knew it was coming.
Who's the Puka of this class?
It's happened the D-Bro, entire process. The Puka of this class? It has happened the entire process. And I'm just like, I didn't, you know, I'm not going to answer it. Not going to answer it, man. But D-Bro, look.
Who's the guy from the rookie fifth rounder from this class who shatters all NFL records?
Oh, jeez, man. The questions have been real, dude. It's been a fun draft process, man. I'll tell you that. It's been a really fun draft process. And before we get the next player in here, again, talking about fun draft processes, man, like this show, the Fantasy Pros NFL Draft Show, has been a labor of love for Thor and I. This has been our baby. We have absolutely loved recording every single episode of this weekly for everybody. So we really hope that y'all have enjoyed this ride as much as us. And this is not like we're going away. Like, this sounds like I'm building up to we're not coming back. But no, this all comes down to, if you haven't enjoyed this show as much as we have, please help us out. This takes 30 seconds to a minute of your time and a free way to support the show. Go to fantasypros.com/reviews. Give us a 5-star rate and review before the NFL draft is complete. So look, you got till Saturday, okay? When the clock strikes midnight at the end of the 7th round, Mr. Irrelevant has been picked. Get your review in before the bewitching hour. And next week, we're going to shout out all the names or usernames of everybody that leaves us a review on next week's show, when Thor and I are going to rock through our NFC and AFC draft grades for all these teams. So please get in there. Again, fantasypros.com/reviews. Thor.
So, D-Bro, you're saying that everyone who writes us a review on iTunes in the next week, that we will give a shout out to on the next on next week's show.
We're mentioning them all, man. I don't care if it's 200 names. We're going to run through all of them. Wow. Everybody's getting some puff and some praise, because look, if you're tuning into this show, we're trying to give value back to you, man. Like, that's what we've been trying to do this entire process. So we've truly, from the bottom of our hearts, appreciate everybody that has tuned into this show all the way across the process, man. But I'm going to get all choked up here, Thor, because the next guy, again, we're talking about Loveless, guys. Just give this name. I'm just going to sit here and sit back and listen to you give all the good puff and praise about Luke McCaffrey.
Yeah, Luke McCaffrey. And the 10-yard split, I have to go back to the 10-yard split about Jalen Coker first. Jalen Coker's 10-yard split, by the way, so at his speed, was the exact same as Adonai Mitchell at 4.33. Lad McConkey at 4.39. They all had 1.52 10-yard splits. So
interesting. For first and second round grade of prospects. Interesting.
Some explosion there for Mr. Jalen Coker. So just wanted to say that. Luke McCaffrey, the guy who absolutely annihilated his FBS conference, now on the lower tier of the FBS, but at a position that he was brand new to over the last 2 years, had just switched to it after being a quarterback in his formative years of his life, becomes a receiver the last 2 years, and the first 2 years he did it, absolutely annihilated Conference USA. And his brother is one of the NFL's best players. His father is part of NFL royalty as well. And somehow, and then Luke McCaffrey comes into the NFL draft process and tests as a tremendous athlete as well.
By the way, do you know what his 10-yard split is there, Thor? Speaking of putting respect on names, do you want to know who else has a 1.52 10-yard split?
The exact same 1.52.
Interesting. Interesting.
Very, very interesting. And Mr. McCaffrey was also like that. Yeah, obviously the athletic genes there with the McCaffrey, the 94th percentile size adjusted athlete. And Mr. McCaffrey did not duck any tests, unlike some of these other guys were like, no, I don't want to do the agility stuff or you know, what one of the tests they wanted out on. The McCaffreys don't duck any of those. They're totally fine. Comes in at almost 6'2", almost 200 pounds, and that the 94th percentile. A guy who has shown that he can do some of the outside stuff, played predominantly in the slot at Rice. That has had analysts right from the get, both underselling his game, which I find odd, both because of those bloodlines, both because of the production, brand new at the position, and then, of course, that size-adjusted athletic score at the size that I just mentioned. But I think that the other thing is, like, they're like, oh, you know, he's just a slot because he played 75-80% of that at Rice the last 2 years. The context I need to give for people, again, is those were his first 2 years at the position. And then the other thing is, in the Rice system and down there at the G5 just in general, a lot of times you see this, they will put their best receiver inside in the slot because the quarterback play down there is so bad. They want the best receiver closer to the wide receiver. And Luke McCaffrey was indeed pounded with targets at all three levels of the field, which is why I'm more bullish with him. You saw him winning downfield rather consistently, including he has this crazy skill to win in congested quarters. and in contested situations, including, and I've made this point, D-Bro, you know where I'm going with this.
I know
this.
Exactly where you're going. If you weren't going to make it, I was. Go ahead.
He had more catches that he secured when he got smoked and his helmet popped off that I saw than the rest of the wide receivers in this class.
I mean, the rest of this class combined. Like, just, it's crazy, man. Like, somebody needs to go talk to the equipment manager at Rice and be like, hold on, man. Like, we got to look at these chin straps or something, dude. Like, his helmet pops off like three times or four. I mean, I lost count, honestly.
It's absolutely insane. The concentration with him was something that jumped out on his film because, you know, he was able to get closer to the quarterback playing in that slot. But opponents, especially last season, knew what was coming because McCaffrey, very good athlete, you know, like we were mentioning before, when he came out of high school, he was this ballyhooed dual threat quarterback who signed with Nebraska. Everybody wanted him. And the way he got to Rice, I mean, usually this doesn't happen with, like, you know, NFL royalty bloodlines getting down to Rice as a slot receiver. The way it happened was he failed at both Nebraska and then very briefly had this brief dalliance with Louisville trying to be a dual threat quarterback. Well, the arm, it just was not working, the accuracy. So finally he gets down to Rice and they convince him to switch to receiver. Well, that's where the athleticism played there. It's like, now, okay, now we're cooking with gas. So, but then Rice, they just, and JT Daniels, the end of his time there. And then he was injured and has now medically retired. The backups that would come in when JT would get hurt, they would just force the ball to Luke McCaffrey. It's like, oh boy, we got a stud. It's like, how lucky are we? We're playing with Luke friggin' McCaffrey. So they would force the ball up to McCaffrey, like I said, at all three levels. But sometimes they would try to fit it into McCaffrey double covered. It's like, oh, the safety coming down, but he's got to step on the corner, try to fit it in between the two guys. McCaffrey, the concentration between the two guys, and then when he's about to get smacked, like I said, exemplary. The hands are vice grips. I have the stat in here somewhere, but he doesn't drop balls. Last year in the contested situation, just to speak to that, 17 for 18 in the contested situations. He only dropped three balls last year in total on 120 targets over the sum of it. I think you could do different stuff like that with him. Last year, the cut with him, it was 71.5% of his snaps happened in the slot. The rest of them happened out wide. I do think as he learns more, you can get more work for him out wide. Like I said, he has that ability to win at all three levels of the field. I think as he learns more nuance and of the craft and stuff like that, but we know that receiving and ball catching and the athleticism, everything like that, it runs in the family. So because of all these different things, I am more bullish on him than the rest of the industry seems to be. He proved all the concepts through the process. He has risen on other boards. In my opinion, not enough. I think this kid is a sleeper. I think someone is going to get value on him at some point on Saturday. But D-Bro, I don't think he is going to go quite as early as he probably should.
He's not, because people, when they talk about the bloodlines of players, you hear Frank Gore Jr., you hear Brendan Rice, you don't hear Luke McCaffrey. And I told you this whenever we were down in Mobile. I thought one of the most blasphemous slap in the face kind of things was so many people in Mobile asking him about, oh, what's Christian doing at the Super Bowl? And I'm
so
like,
stupid.
You need to talk about Luke McCaffrey's game. Like, you're getting a chance to talk to this kid and ask him about his game. And it's been a fantastic wild ride of his collegiate career.
One of the more interesting sleeper receivers we have in this class. And all they could ask was about was his brother.
It's crazy, man. And I'm not trying to take shots at people, but we need to put respect on these kids' games and ask them about what their process is and talk to them about them. Because, again, give him the respect. You're in there talking to him for a player that you talked about the athletic testing, Thor. I'm going to sit here and double down on that, man. His three cone, 87th percentile. His 20-yard shuttle, 91st percentile. So for a player that also was 26th in PFF receiving grade last season, I'm with you on all parts of pieces, man. I've loved his game, and I have him ranked where some people could think this is aggressively. I have him ranked as my wide receiver 18 in this class over Brendan Rice, over Jalen McMillan, over everybody's favorite darling, Jalen Polk, over Malachi Corley, over Tez Walker. I'm putting respect on his name, and people need to be doing the same, man, because the kid can play. He can win from the slot. He can win outside. And I think there's another evolution of his game that will happen in the NFL. And my comp for him, and this is not lazy taking the former quarterback aspect of this, but for a player that made the same position change and really had to come in to the NFL and prove people wrong and continue to prove it. My comp for Luke McCaffrey is Jacoby Myers. I love his game. I'm with you.
Love it. Yeah, I rank McCaffrey wide receiver 17. And the last thing that I wanted to say about him, I mentioned the downfield utility that I don't think he gets enough credit for. The other thing, though, as far as the short and intermediate utility that you get from McCaffrey, that and also the keep in mind, again, former dual threat quarterback, who the thing he was the best at, it was running the ball, because the thing that he stunk at was throwing it. It's why he had to switch positions. But I think that there is some sneaky deaky gadget utility with this kid as well.
Agreed.
Over the last 2 years. So again, this is when he moved, when he goes to Rice, he's a receiver. Over that time, I mentioned how he didn't drop any balls. Last year was the three drops over the 120 targets. But over the last two seasons, McCaffrey, 25 broken tackles those last two seasons with zero fumbles. So he is also very reliable. And if you manufacture touches for him, not only do you have the athletic kid and the brother of the best running back in the NFL, he's also going to break the tackles and reliable with the ball in addition. You're not going to put it on the carpet.
Somebody's going to get a steal for him in the NFL draft. Steal. He's going to go probably round five, and some team, we're going to look back on it next year and say, how the heck did he get that low? And people are going to tell you,
how did the brother of the MVP guy go that low? No one's going to understand why.
It's going to be fun, man. But on to another player that I think we need to be putting respect with, and that's Jamari Thrash, wide receiver out of Louisville. And in breaking down his game, am I going to tell you that Jamari Thrash is going to be a wide receiver one or wide receiver two in the NFL? No, I don't see that. But I think Jamari Thrash can develop into a rock solid wide receiver three. And if he lands in the right situation, can he become an underneath weapon for a team and be a guy that, like, look, he just soaks up targets because he's open all the freaking time. I think Jamari Thrash can absolutely do that. 2022, he was 14th in yards per route run, 28th in PFF receiving grade. And while I don't think that you're going to see him go down the field, he's not going to be stretching the field, he can absolutely torch guys underneath. He's a smooth operator. He's got easy change of direction. And that's really what I think his superpower is, man. Quick feet off the line. He has problems at the catch point, only a 32.6% contested catch rate in college. And again, not a burner, but a player that I could see utility. And I hate that this guy, and this is my comp for him, I hate that he got hurt. And we never saw what he could have been going from the Atlanta Falcons to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. My comp for him is Russell Gage, and I think he could have a very similar career arc. What are your thoughts on Thrash?
Yeah, I'm just a little bit lower on Thrash, although the thing that I like about him, when you just have to get the ball in his hands. Like, when
yes,
you get the
that's it.
Yeah, I loved him both going back to Georgia State, and then of course at Louisville last year. I loved that when Brom identified him, because then you get him into the Rondale role in that offense. But when he gets the ball in his hands, it becomes the chicken in a coop thing. It becomes like it's like the car chase, you know, like he's just very hard to get your hands on at that point. But like you mentioned the ball skills,
you're turning on the Benny Hill music.
That's exactly what it is. And that's where the fun starts in them. But it's like that, it's, you know, and this is going to carry the day as far as where does his career go in the NFL and how long is his career in the NFL? Like, what he needs to figure out how to get that ball in his hands. Right. Like, yeah, because they're not going to be, in the NFL, people learn how to win that themselves, right? Like, it's not going to be the same thing in college where they're manufacturing that for him. And he's not as physically gifted over the guys, you know, analogous to him on the other side of the ball, where teams are going to be incentivized to use a portion of their offensive snaps to do that for him. So he's going to have to learn to win as the route runner and a little bit further along down the field. But the thing with the ball in his hands speaks for itself. It is really, really fun. So if he can learn to the route running, winning a little bit more, winning a little bit further down the field, the thing with the ball, you know, as the runner, that will play at the NFL level.
Absolutely agree, man. And like we're talking about, look, if you're looking for a fun time, turn on the film for Jalen Coker, Luke McCaffrey. And while you're doing so, bring up that second screen, baby. And if you're looking for a fun time, you got to be heading to Reality Sports Online. Powerful fantasy sports platform where owners get to build and manage fantasy teams like NFL GMs. You got to head over there and try this. Free agency, multi-year contracts, a rookie draft, multi-team trades, franchise tags, contract extensions, first round rookie options, automated contract and salary cap functionality, and a ton more. It is not complicated at all. It just gives you another layer of strategy and playing this game about a game that we love so much. If you think you're amongst the fantasy elite, head over there today. You can test out your GM skills for free with a mock free agency auction. Again, use the promo code FANTASYPROS to receive a 10% discount on your team or league today. The promo code FANTASYPROS for 10% off on your team or league today. Fantasy just got real at RealitySportsOnline.com.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't Nick.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Let's get real, Hilthor. Running backs, baby. We talked about a few of them. Let's go back to the position here. Again, talking about the guys outside the top 15 per consensus. Who is the guy you want to bring up here?
Yeah, since we were doing our, you know, it's draft week and we're almost there and this is going to be our last one in the weeds. We had to hit a guy that I'm pretty sure that we had not hit yet, if even briefly. Had to hit him out the door is Dylan Johnson. I think is there's some intrigue there, is a guy that I think is going to hang around for a while and could have some flashes in the future, stretches of utility for fantasy owners out there, because he has utility in two different aspects of the game. And I appreciate his game. I think that coaches are going to as well. He's a kid who was relevant in college football for the last 4 years. And last year was a big time contributor on a team that went all the way to the college football national championship game with Washington. I thought what was really interesting about Dylan Johnson's college career, he's a kid who's almost 6 feet tall. He's 217 pounds. So he's slightly above threshold size back, but he signed back in the day during the COVID season recruiting class with Mike Leach's Mississippi State team, to be an air raid receiving back. And that's what he was initially during his collegiate career. So get this, his true freshman season back there, 2020, 11 games, only has 51 carries for Mississippi State, 36 catches. Okay. As a sophomore, 89 carries, 65 catches. Then as a junior, 89 carries, 48 catches for Mississippi State. Then, and I'm sure, like, I didn't hear Dylan Johnson talk about this. I almost hesitate to even bring this up because his the coaches and teammates that I've heard talk about Dylan Johnson love him. Kalen DeBoer raves about him. Dylan Johnson and Mike Leach had a disagreement at the end of Dylan Johnson's time at Mississippi State, which led Dylan Johnson to transfer. Mike Leach had the medical thing right then and, you know, had the tragically passed away. So that was very obviously unfortunate. Dylan Johnson then goes to Washington. What it became for Dylan Johnson, he had proved that he could be the pass catcher. He also wanted to show that he could be the bell cow guy and get the full usage. And I think that was a part of the thing that in his discussions with Leach wanted to be on the field more and stuff like that. With DeBoer, it was the shot to be on the field for a higher percentage, but also to show that other aspect of his game where it was the more pass catching stuff in the Mississippi State offense. He got to show the other stuff with the Washington offense. Everyone that watched the Huskies last year, you know that when Penix went back to throw, looking at Odunze first, and then if that wasn't there, that's when you're looking for whether it be McMillan, whether it be Polk, and then after that, Westover, Culp, yep, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Penix wasn't exactly looking to check the ball down very often. No.
Dylan Johnson, and speaking of check, I mean, Dylan Johnson was further down the line, you know, of that continuum, right? But what Dylan Johnson did do last year, and this is what I like for his evaluation, he ran the ball 233 times. Dylan Johnson ran the ball more times last year than he had in his entire three-year career prior to that. Only caught the ball 24 times. Well, he'd already proved the concept that he is one heck of a receiver prior to that in a true blue air raid offense from the godfather inventor of the air raid offense as we know it in modern football. So Dylan Johnson, very good receiver, 173 receptions in college. Last season, didn't drop the ball one time at Washington. The versatility speaks for itself. He was the bell cow on the Washington offense last year. And the one-off season switchover, like, we didn't know, like, that he was – I didn't know if he could do the, you know, just act sort of as that for an offense like Washington after he had just been used more or less as the pass catcher under Leach. I had no idea. And he proved that he could do it last year. The other thing I love about that kid, tough as nails. He plays hurt. He did it at Mississippi State. And then last year, he was badly compromised down the stretch. And I don't know that people, and you see him get ranked pretty low on some people's rankings. My theory is that they are watching tape on him from down the stretch last year and don't realize the context that they are watching him playing when maybe other players would not have been playing. You know, particularly like in the college football playoff, I thought that maybe he shouldn't have even been out there. He was badly, badly compromised down the stretch. So keep in mind, you know, people, when you take a look at his work down the stretch, he was gutting it out. He had to get carried off the end of the Texas game. So, you know, and there was the games down the stretch where it was, and there was actually, I'm not going to get into the whole thing because we don't have time, but that caused a fascinating thing with the clock where it stopped because they had to get Dylan Johnson off the field because he could not physically get himself off. But then he came back for the college football championship game 8 days later, whatever. I didn't think there was any chance. The kid is a warrior, is the whole point. Plays hurt. Has a threshold size. The only thing that he has the versatility. The only thing lacks speed, categorically lacks speed. You see this on his film as well, but he does have the skills and he does have that versatility. I think that this is a guy that goes into the NFL and is the committee dude right away, right? Like, he's the mix and match fella for you. You bring him in and he does that. There are limitations on his athletic profile that probably prevent him from ever being a star, but this is the kind of guy that NFL coaches really like because he can do a little bit of everything. And I think his game plays best because of the patient style that he has and certainly what he showed last year at Washington. Probably a zone blocking scheme would be best for his skill set as a runner, but in general, offense that throws a little bit more to the backs, I think would behoove or would play up the value proposition that he is going to provide and a discount on the price tag that you are going to get next week. And I think on Saturday when he is selected, assuredly late because that athletic profile.
Yeah, man. I like his game. I've got currently at RB20 in my rankings. There's a lot to like about his game, and I think there's a lot of utility in the NFL. And that moves me over to a guy that I have at RB15 that I agree with, like, that I think that he has similar utility. That there are some shortcomings to his game, but the guy that I got to bring up here is Kendall Milton. And people could say, well, this is really not deep enough, and I know he comes out of Georgia and stuff. Kendall Milton's not getting hype in this class, man. People that like, that at least not enough to where I think that he should be. We're talking about a running back that last year at Georgia, amongst all guys with at least 100 carries in college, was 13th in yards after contact per attempt, 21st in breakaway run rate. And are there physical limitations as far as the long speed because he ran a 4.62? Sure, but if we get better context, and Thor, you and I both know that tackle breaking ability translates more if we're looking at one metric on that, not the short area stuff. It's the 10-yard split. And Kendall Milton gets up to the top speed quickly, man. 86th percentile 10-yard split. And also, he's not a bad athlete in the sense that he also had an 83rd percentile broad jump. So there is athleticism there. And the guy that I kept watching when I was watching Milton, and the guy that I kept thinking about the entire time was, he reminds me of Roschon Johnson with a little bit less pass game utility, and in the sense that he's a downhill runner, he's a one speed thumper kind of guy. Give him one cut, get him into the second level, and just let him punish people. I think he can definitely do that. Now, is he going to break off home runs? No. Is he a little bit more of an upright runner, and you can kind of chop him down at certain times? Sure. But if he can get into the second level, get him 3 to 5 yards past the line of scrimmage, he can put a hurting on people. And the part where I eventually especially want to highlight about his game is I think that he can also play on passing downs. And this is not talking about his route running. I think he'll be a competent, not standout receiving back, but he can protect the quarterback, dude. 73.1 pass blocking grade, gave up 0 sacks or hurries and 26 pass blocking snaps last year. So as a player that if you were to thrust him into a 3-down workload and say, we're going to give this guy 20 carries a game, can he hold up? I think he can. He's got the size and the ability to do that. Now, what kind of run game scheme you're going to put him in? Probably more gap, more inside zone, get him downhill immediately. But he's got pass pro chops. He can break tackles. There's utility here, man. So I think the deeper parts of his game and where he can be utilized, I'm not telling you that he goes top 3 rounds in the NFL draft. He's a eventual future starter. Does he go round 5? Can he land on the depth chart? And if injuries occur, can he step forward and handle a starter's workload? And who knows, man? Could he get a job and then say, look, I got the reins on this, play well and not let it go? It's threading the needle, but it could happen.
Yeah, he's the thing. So not super sexy of a profile, but he's a guy who's going to hang around for sure for the reasons that you mentioned. Short yardage guy, absolutely. And then the pass pro, which is underrated. People don't talk about it, but it's the thing that keeps you on the field on those passing downs. He's not a good receiver. Georgia never used him as that, but he absolutely is a reliable pass catcher, and he absolutely will grind out those short yardage things, the short yardage situations. Georgia effectively used him with that. So that is what Kendall Milton will bring to the NFL, and that's why he's going to stay on an NFL roster for a while.
Absolutely, man. So final guy you're going to bring up here. I know, again, we're getting into the weeds, dude. We're going outside the top 12 tight ends. Who's the name on your list?
So, yeah, so we had to toss out a tight end, and I'm going to be just totally transparent here. Outside of those, you know, we had talked initially about the top 10 consensus tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that group, I'm looking through this trying to find for you guys a deep tight end sleeper that I think could eventually be, you know, someone for dynasty guys to potentially target. It starts to get slim pickings real quick.
Agreed.
This tight end class, like the you know, we find that this, you know, running backs and the receivers, tossing those ones out, those ones are easier. You know, especially these, and the receiver one, we could have gone a lot longer, deeper. I think we had to sort of cut ourselves off and limit ourselves.
Yep.
This tight end class was kind of tough. We were like, man, we really should toss out a tight end, but we're kind of like, yeah, we don't, you know, who's going like, to take the tight end?
Do you go with Devin Culp, the smaller athletic, but he's basically a receiver guy?
You go with the other one, Westover, you go with, who do you go with?
I like the name you picked here, though. I'm going to say that. I like the name you picked here.
Yeah, and I did watch it after my after my session with Mr. Coker last night, which that was the true fun last night. I spent the next portion of my evening with the 2023 spin through again on Mr. McLaughlin, Tanner McLaughlin from Arizona, did another spin through on him. That one, though, I remained exactly where I was before. However, that is sufficient to make him worthy of the shout out for the purposes of this, which, again, there are so few guys after those consensus top 10 tight ends that could fill a role in the NFL of catching, that you could even project to catch 40 balls someday, right? Like, that even have the physical ability to maybe do that someday. Tanner McLaughlin fits that bill, and that is why he is getting the shout out here. The thing that he can't do, it's block. He ain't going to do that for you. You're not going to put him in line. The question for him becomes, is he a good enough receiver that he can justify the roster spot going forward as that? And then the question for fantasy owners is it, and then for his livelihood going forward, vis-a-vis that, is he a good enough pass catcher where he is one of the 30 best at that, the big slot thing, right? Like, or one of the 20 best at that, where he demands that sort of usage and utility from his NFL team, where he is getting that 35, 40 plus catches per season, where he's around that sort of thing, so he becomes fantasy relevant. He does have some ball skills, I will give him that. I love watching Arizona tape because I so enjoy watching their quarterback Noah Fifita, the little pint-sized scrambler guy who is so fun to watch in the pocket when he's zooming around. He's the opposite of watching the quarterback he displaced, Jaden Delora, who is a quarterback who found his way into this class. That's a story for another day. But McLaughlin can move a bit. His testing profile, 6'5" and a shade over that, 244 pounds and a 76th percentile athletic score. His 4.61, decidedly above average in this class. He lacks arm length. Hands are a little bit smaller. It's not perfect, you know, again, and because of the lack of play strength, he's not going to be able to play inline. But he does have those ball skills. Like I said, I saw him create separation again and again during his tape. He was not the first option invariably when you were watching his cut-up. Generally, it was Mr. McMillan, and the secondary one was Mr. Cowing. But McLaughlin was effective in, especially over the intermediate range. He presents himself because he's the tall fella, you know, who moves pretty well, especially in the Pac-12. 12, right? And so he would flash himself, he would get open, and can get down the seam as well. And Fifita would find him when he flashed himself open. I think that that is enough to shout out as a sleeper here. And for guys that are in deep dynasty leagues out there, he would be the guy that I would point to. There's other, you know, like I see him right around qualitatively, for instance, like a Jared Wiley, who other people see as like a top 5-6 tight end in the entire class. I see McLaughlin more or less like right with him qualitatively as a pass catching tight end heading to the next level. So, I rank McLaughlin right next to Jaheim Bell, who from the fantasy community, Jaheim Bell has gotten way more hype. I would put those guys right next to each other. I think McLaughlin has the same odds that Jaheim Bell does of carving out that role of getting that 35 to 40 catches for 3, 4, 5 seasons in the NFL. So Tanner McLaughlin, got to keep an eye on.
Yeah, agreed. And just to add a little more flavor around the edges here, because look, you talked about the athletic profile, 7.6 RAS, 83rd percentile vert, ran the 40 at 4.61, a 93rd percentile outcome. And even if you pointed the analytics, man, amongst all tight ends last year, at least 20 targets, Tanner was 21st in PFF receiving grade, 8th in missed tackles forced. So there is some utility and some ability after the catch there. So I like the call, man. Again, getting a tight end here, because we know that people play in dynasty leagues that are tight end premium and trying to, you know, wedge these guys into your taxi squad. And I'm going to go deep down the weeds here, man. I'm going to get deep into it. And your ears kind of started burning and your eyebrows perked up whenever you saw this name on the show sheet this morning and said, oh, baby, we really are getting deep. But a player that I think people need to be looking at, and we'll see where he goes. I'm not telling you that he gets drafted, maybe goes UDFA, but I'll be very curious, and I will be stashing him on a ton of taxi squads, and that's Raymond Jefferson. And if you have not heard the name Raymond Jefferson, you're probably not alone at this point. But some backstory on Mr. Raymond Jefferson. First of all, as a running back coming out of Kentucky, unfortunately, he did not see the field very much over the last 2 years. He can unfortunately thank Mr. Ray Davis for that. But Raymond Jefferson started his collegiate career at Maine, then transferred to Sam Houston, balled out at Sam Houston from 2020 to 2021. Then, unfortunately, if you were hoping Raymond Jefferson goes somewhere, bigger school, gets some puff, and then we'd be talking about him in a different ilk if Ray Davis had never gone to Kentucky. And looking at what Raymond Jefferson brings to the NFL, he sat on the bench in Kentucky for 2 years. So going back to his film and his analytics when he actually got playing time at Sam Houston, 2020 to 2021, amongst all running backs with at least 100 carries, this guy was 6th in missed tackles forced per attempt, 22nd in yards after contact per attempt, and 16th in explosive runs. He's got the size. He's 5'9", 200 pounds. Now, the receiving utility is not fantastic. Only 8 targets and 0.3 yards per route run in college. But if we're looking at a player that checks boxes as far as the athleticism, because again, putting respect on this guy's name, talked about the size. His vert was 39.5, 95th percentile outcome. Broad was 10.7, 95th percentile. His 10-yard split, Thor, was 87th percentile at 1.55. And even his 40 checked the box at 4.53. So the athleticism is there. The tackle breaking, yes, it was a lower conference, is there. I liked his film, too. Short, squatty guy. I love guys that are just bowling ball mentality. They get in the second level. They're pinballing off guys. I mean, there are similar qualities that I can point back to in talking about Blake Watson's game that I can talk about with Raymond Jefferson. You get him into the second level, and he's showing more tackle-breaking ability at his size than people are going to give him credit. And a lot of this, that dude is thick, man. His calves are thick. His legs are thick. It is hard to bring him down in the second level. He's just creating odd angles for tacklers to try to bring him down. He's slippery through the hole. I like his game, dude. And I'm not telling you he's a home run hitter or anything like that. But if you combine the tackle breaking metrics, you combine the athleticism and the size to where if somebody asks him, can you tote the rock? Can you get 15 touches per game? I think he absolutely can do that. But for a guy that you're not going to hear a lot of draft shows out there talking about freaking Raymond Jefferson, dude. What do you think about him?
Yeah, he was a guy that was sort of star-crossed by the situation and unfortunate at the end of the career. Obviously, he got stuck on the same depth chart with Mr. Ray Davis. And Ray Davis, a guy who had hopped around in his career and then winds up at Kentucky. And Jefferson was a guy that we thought throughout his career, you know, was going to get that opportunity break out in a big way at, you know, the high level of the FBS there. And didn't quite end up happening, but he has that athletic juice and retains some of that shine. So, you know, that's what you're looking for when you're looking deep in the weeds, deep, deep, deep in the weeds on the profile of some of these guys as someone who could potentially break out. You know, that's some of the guys that I like way, way, way down there in the running back class of the UDFA is they fit a sort of similar mold of like, guys that have athletic traits where on the UDFA free-for-all, if I was in a front office, I would be giving some of these guys a slightly elevated UDFA signing bonus offer just on the athletic traits to bring them in for these reasons. Like that's the way you do it. There's a kid for Southern Illinois that was their one beat back who has incredible athletic traits and had his per touch efficiency numbers and explosive numbers were very good.
You're talking about Mr. Justin Strong, aren't
you? I'm talking about Justin Strong. Yep, yeah.
I almost talked about him and brought him up on the show too.
He put up a 996 RAS at almost 6 feet, 206. And yeah, the per touch numbers were very, very good. He was platooning with another guy who was in this class that is a very unorthodox 5'5" running back that I have him lower down in my rankings. I don't think it translates quite as well to the next level, but the Southern Illinois staff obviously liked him. But Justin Strong is the one where those traits potentially could translate pretty well to the next level. We'll just have to see. But like, again, that's what you're looking for with this stuff. When you're going further down, you're trying to pick out some of these traits that you know translate by the data to NFL success potentially. So, you know, a couple guys like that going way, way deep in the weeds. We thought we would toss some of those guys out. One from the receiver class, again, way down in the weeds that I kind of liked was Sam Schnee from Northern Iowa that kind of intrigued me. A guy that's going to go undrafted for sure. And then the testing freak from way off the beaten track is John Giles from down there. Was 6'3", 222, 80th percentile athlete, tested very well. Also kind of intrigued by Bo Corrales, a guy who started at UNC, then went down to Texas Tech. Had been injured a little bit, but I think his career could have gone a little bit better. And his testing was very good. Got sort of some of the shine retained back there. But 6'3", 214 pounds, 91st percentile athlete. So a couple more deep, deep sleepers to keep an eye on that are going to be UDFAs, but potentially could show something in camp, hang around, and justify a developmental look from teams.
Yeah, I agree. Jaden Sheridan out of Monmouth almost made my list as well. 5'9", 195, and his numbers just jump off the page. 3.96 yards of contact per attempt. Finished with a 54% breakaway rate. Some issues with his vision, but the athleticism is definitely NFL quality, man. So some other guys we want to bring up before we get up out of here, man. But again, we are going to be live on YouTube, baby, for night one and night two of the NFL draft. Night one, we're kicking off at 7 p.m. Eastern. So get into the Fantasy Pros YouTube. Get ready. It is going to be lit, dude. Before we get up out of here, Thor, one other guy that we wanted to bring up here, but we can't talk about him as a prospect because unfortunately he's not a prospect. He is already signed to an NFL contract. I will let you kind of lay this out, but we have to mention Mr. Dante Miller here, right?
Yeah. Yeah, doing the 500 board and you know, researching as many prospects as I do during the mm-hmm. spring and then cutting it down to the 500 and how that goes and the position rankings, it's a little bit deeper.
He was in the 500 too, wasn't he? You had to end up yanking him out, didn't you?
So Miller was not in my 500, but he was in the prospects that were just outside of it. And my position rankings for people out there, they're deeper than the 500, and they are dropping on Fantasy Pros this week. With the skill ones, I do the comps for all the deeper ones as well. So if you think the 500 comps are wild, you get even more in the position rankings. So check that out on Fantasy Pros, the quarterbacks, the running backs, the receivers. I think with the receivers, I have like 110 or 115 comps on those. It gets truly stupid. But Dante Miller was, off the top of my head, I have 50 in the 50s or something in my running back rankings. I seen that he had signed with the Giants after his pro day. And I was like, what the hey? And so I look into, cause it's like, you know, obviously it is not a every year occurrence for me where someone in my active draft rankings in the, you know, as I'm doing my cross checks, you know, finalizing these position rankings has signed with a team. So I was like, well, I must have screwed something up. So I'm looking into this. No. That's not what happened. Dante Miller had gone to his pro day at South Carolina and had ripped it up. He ran in the what was it?
I got all the numbers right here, baby. Run
through it real quick,
dude. At 5'8", 190, he tore it up. I mean, 7.6 RAS, but here's the highlights, baby. 4.38 40-yard dash, 98th percentile. 10-yard split was at 1.5, 98th percentile. His vert was 37.5, 88th percentile. His broad, 10.9, 97th percentile. But again, go ahead, Thor.
Yeah, so, you know, because of that, the teams were obviously very interested, but it brought up an interesting point, which is teams started to wonder, is this guy eligible for the draft? Because he had got, so mm-hmm. Here's the thing with Dante Miller. Last year, prior to last season, what year was it? He had transferred from Columbia, mm-hmm. I guess prior to the 2020, he has such a confusing story. After the 2021 season. So he had started with South Carolina prior to then, in the 2022 season was his first year there, mm-hmm. but he thought that he was going to have another year of eligibility this past season. The NCAA ruled Dante, and he thought he was going to take over as the lead back because D-Bro's man crush, Marshawn Lloyd, transferred to the other USC in the offseason. And the Gamecocks' running back room now was wide open. And in fact, because of this development that I'm going to tell you about in a second, they had problems filling that all season. They also had the rancid offensive line when we talk about Spencer Rattler. But anyhow, mm-hmm. right before the season, the NCAA told Dante Miller that he was ineligible, which goes back to when Dante Miller began his career, it was at Columbia in the Ivy League. He had one breakout season in 2021, which is how he ended up getting interest from the Power Five schools, ended up transferring to South Carolina, had that one season there. But in the Ivy League, they have different rules than the other Division One conferences and whatever. And in the Ivy League, you just get 4 seasons of eligibility. They don't, the red shirts and the COVID seasons, and they don't give you the other, you know, like that we get in the other conferences get.
I never knew that was a thing until we started talking about Dante Miller last night.
Yeah, you know, you hear all these other guys of like, oh, it's a 6-year senior. Like, that's not a thing in the Ivy League. And so he had gotten a 1-year exception to go for his first year at South Carolina, but he wanted and thought he was going to get the 6-year for the other one. But the NCAA ruled him ineligible, like I said, right prior to the 2023 season when he thought he was in contention and very well was going to be the bell cow starting running back for the South Carolina team last season. And if he had been that, we might have been talking about him as, who knows, a different reality sliding doors. Maybe we're even talking about him as potential draftable kid in this running back class. Instead, he gets ruled ineligible. So last year in the fall, he practices with South Carolina all season, but, you know, whatever. Then, of course, so he's not playing. He just practices. Then he does the pro day stuff. Well, then people were wondering, well, hey, the NCAA ruled him ineligible for 2023. Is he actually eligible for this draft if that was the case? So the NFL, they asked the NFL. The NFL looks into it. And the NFL's like, no, actually, technically, he was eligible for the last draft. And seeing as though he went undrafted, he has technically been a street free agent and just didn't realize it since after the last draft. So he was
wild, man.
Granted his free agency on the spot. So he starts getting free agent offers. This is, again, right after this awesome pro day performance that he had put on, you know, within the past month plus, whatever. And so he got offers from multiple teams, one of which was the Giants, which, of course, was a local team for him when he had gone to Columbia and been in the Ivy League. And in the 2021 season, that was in the Ivy League. That was when he had broken out 814 yards. And he had the explosive play metrics. D-Bro, you were going into those. We had some fun looking into Dante Miller, and the pass blocking as well. He has some interesting aspects to his game and then the juice as well. But I ended up having, of course, because of all this, to take him out of my draft rankings, my position rankings. So I apologize to Mr. Dante Miller. I was not aware because the NCAA didn't tell me. They didn't tell you. The NFL didn't tell you that you were in the last draft class. So I couldn't put you in my last draft rankings. But we wanted to tell all the fantasy owners out there that Dante Miller is in the NFL right now. And we wanted to apprise you of his existence because he fell through the cracks last year. But this kid is super duper athletic and he has big time wheels.
Absolutely, man. And I'm looking through all of his stuff as you're giving his entire backstory. I did not know his nickname was Lil Turbo. So if Lil Turbo is
Lil
out there.
Lil Turbo.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yes.
Dude. Oh, I love fabulous. It. I love it. So if Lil Turbo is sitting out there on the waiver wire in any sleeper leagues, dynasty leagues that you're in, go toss him, see if you could sneak him through waivers, because technically he is in the NFL, baby. But Thor and I got deep into the weeds, man. We wanted to give all the prospects that we really think deserved, turn the light on, put the shine on for this class. Really hope that everybody enjoyed this episode. And we will see you later this week live on YouTube for night one and night two of the NFL draft. Turn on notifications. Get ready for that. It's going to be a blast. For this episode, we'll be back next week. We're going to talk about AFC and NFC draft grades on this show, yes, baby. Until then, we're out of here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Dynasty Football Podcast. If you love the show, the best free way to support us is by leaving a positive review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Follow us on X, Instagram, and TikTok @FantasyPros, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/FantasyPros.